720 WGN. Hello, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, coming to you from our new studios here on the 18th floor. It is gorgeous here. It's a beautiful, beautiful view. I'm normally commenting on the gorgeous weather and people walking by. I don't see people walking by, but I definitely see the gorgeous weather happening today, and I hope you are able to get outside and enjoy some of that. We have a short show for you today. We're going to turn things over to White Sox baseball here at 12:35 after the news. So we still have a lot to do today, though, so let's get started. A little bit later, we're going to be taking a look at reforming the Illinois electricity market, or in particular, why it is so difficult to do. But right now, we are joined by Natalie Kitroev from the New York Times. There is a story there that is all about pregnancy discrimination. And, you know, in 1978, the Supreme Court passed the Pregnancy Discrimination Act. So it's you know, easy to think that perhaps all this kind of stuff does not happen quite as rampantly. But this is a really, really shocking story. And for those of you who follow me on Twitter, I'm going to be sure and share it after the broadcast. You can read it for yourself, because, Natalie, some of the things in this story were just downright hard to read about instances, particular cases at very large companies of unbelievable discrimination.
Yeah. We found, you know, the Pregnancy Discrimination Act was passed in 2008, but we found that pregnancy discrimination complaints are sort of at their highest level. So, you know, this problem hasn't gone away. And while there are laws on the books that make it illegal, that doesn't sort of change the way that women who interact with their managers experience the kind of workplace after getting pregnant.
Well, you mentioned that right now it's at its highest level. Why do you think that is right now? Why is it so rampant?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, one of the reasons is that women are much more likely to work through pregnancy today than they were, like, even a half century ago. So, you know, back in the late 60s, only 44% of women were working, you know, all into the pregnancy, and now it's closer to two-thirds. So you've seen there's just much more opportunity for this kind of thing to happen. And, you know, women are more likely to be breadwinners. So it's become a kind of more widespread, just so it's become a more widespread problem.
Right. I think you're on a cell phone. If you're wandering, maybe I think we lost you there for 1 second. So maybe stand near a window where you get all the good bars on your signal. But anyway, so what does that generally? What does this discrimination look like mostly in the workplace? Well, I mean, some of the examples in the story were so shocking, but were there common threads that emerged as you started doing this reporting?
Yeah. So you know, it depends on where you work. You know, we found that this happens at every rung of the economic ladder. So, you know, for women at Walmart, for example, the way that this plays out is often that they would like an accommodation. So they've been told by their doctors not to lift heavy things. We talked to a woman who went to her manager and, you know, brought a doctor's note saying that she couldn't do heavy lifting. And her manager said that she had seen Demi Moore do a somersault on TV when she was nearly full term. So being pregnant wasn't an excuse. We talked to a woman who fainted, and, you know, on her way to work, and complained about the chemicals she was working with and was not given a permanent reassignment. And so she had to keep working with those chemicals. And then, you know, for white collar women, for women who are in sort of offices, it can be subtle. It can be a manager sort of, it depends. You know, we did have egregious examples. We had a woman who worked for Novartis who told her boss she was pregnant, and he told her to consider an abortion. We have a woman who worked at Glencore, the world's largest commodities trading firm, who was, you know, pregnant and talked to her boss about potentially making sort of lateral, you know, career moves outside of the company. And he said, "You're old and having babies, so there's nowhere for you to go." But it isn't always that egregious, and it can be a much more sort of imperceptible sometimes experience of being shifted onto projects that matter less or not invited to the same client meetings. You know, it's it plays out in very different ways depending on where you work and who your boss is.
Yeah, some of the examples, you know, really reminded me of the death by a thousand cuts sort of phenomenon, but just that, yes, that in Technicolor, you know, that turned up to such a high degree. And so what can be done when, you know, obviously the women are fighting back legally, but what can be done in a workplace to ensure that culture is just not welcome and not happening and not present?
Well, I mean, it's a difficult question, and I think, you know, the place where it really starts is women understanding that kind of treatment is not just wrong, it's illegal. And, you know, when I think sort of one of the common threads that we found is that even the most educated women, you know, the most kind of legal savvy women didn't know often when this started that this was illegal. And so I think when that understanding of treatment, you know, we're talking about legal stuff. I'm not just talking about, you know, a slight here or there. When you're really being obviously discriminated against, if that becomes more, if it becomes more of a cultural shift where we're thinking about that as something that's not acceptable, you know, I think that would change things. And I think a lot of employers don't, you know, have policies on the books that are really great. But you know, they have ways down to, you know, middle manager level, store manager level. I think that could make a change.
Well, like I said, for those of you who follow me on Twitter, I'm going to share this story after the broadcast because it is really, really shocking, but a really, really important read. Natalie Kitreff, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we are going to go on a little break back in just a bit, and we're going to talk a little bit about the difficulty of reforming the Illinois electricity market back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us. Grateful to you for sharing part of your Saturday with me. Like I said at the top of the program, a little bit short show today. We're going to get you over to all things White Sox baseball here in just a bit after the 12:30 news. But right now we are joined by Steve Daniels, a senior reporter at Crain's Chicago Business. Steve, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being with us today.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
So, Steve, you wrote about the difficulty of reforming the Illinois electricity market and how it routinely overcharges customers. And for those of you who follow me on Twitter, I'm going to be sure and share this story after the program because it is really a very interesting one because it seems, I don't know, maybe Pollyanna here, but it seems relatively straightforward that, you know, if customers are being overcharged, that would be something that would be relatively easy to fix once it's called out into light. But that is just not the case, as you found.
Yes, and that's exactly right. I mean, this really shouldn't be complicated. It shouldn't be a hard market to reform. Effectively, what's happening routinely is that customers who are, you know, they have people come to their doors, they have people call them. Electricity is a confusing thing anyway. People don't really understand how their rates are set and that sort of thing. And it doesn't get any less confusing, generally speaking, when these suppliers come knocking on their doors. So they promise things or sort of allude to promise of savings, get people to sign up, and you might save for a month or two or three, and then suddenly you're paying, you know, 20% more than that over what you would get with ComEd without really, with only a minimal effort to contact you and alert you to that. It's just, you know, the Attorney General called it legalized fraud, and it's hard to disagree.
Right, right. And so the reform measure that was entered into but fell short just last month, that also seemed kind of unbelievable that was defeated. And it seems very easy to call shenanigans on that too when you kind of start looking at who's backing that bill and who wasn't and all of those things.
Right. And, you know, all of this boils down to a very simple thing, that the state legislature doesn't like to do things that are not agreed to by Exelon, which is the parent company of Commonwealth Edison. Exelon is arguably the most cloud heavy company in the state. They give very generously to campaigns, and are a very, very reliable contributor for any number of politicians, particularly leaders. Now, in this case, the Speaker of the House supported this bill, which makes it all the more odd. Typically, measures pass his chamber when he supports them. That wasn't the case in this case. It fell just short, thanks to opposition from Exelon, more or less opposition from ComEd, although they called themselves neutral, and opposition, even most surprisingly, from the Illinois Commerce Commission, which regulates this arena and has already said that we need tougher measures.
And so is this just specific to Illinois, or are we seeing this in other states too?
No, this is we see this in other states, and other states have taken far stronger action. New York State in particular barred suppliers from marketing to people of in certain low-income strata. Anybody who is getting low-income heating or energy assistance, anybody on a partial payment plan with utility, it's illegal to sell them electricity on the competitive market. So, and that was part of this bill would have also done that. And so there are states that have taken stronger action, New York most notably.
What was most surprising to you as you started working on this story?
Well, I've been covering this arena for a long time, so most of this is not surprising to me. I think the thing that did stand out to me was the opposition of the Illinois Commerce Commission. I mean, after all, these are the referees of the market. They're the ones who provide us the information that shows just how much people are overpaying for this. And just put this in context. We're not talking about a couple bucks a year or something. On average, people are paying over $100 more per year than they should. What was most surprising was that the ICC actually came out in opposition to this. They did so over a turf battle with the Attorney General, which this bill would have given the Attorney General more enforcement power than it has under the law currently, which to my mind at least was hardly a reason for opposing something that otherwise is really desperately needed.
Indeed, indeed. Steve Daniels, senior reporter at Crain's Chicago Business, thanks so much for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You bet. All right, so as I said, if you follow me on Twitter, I'm going to be sure and tweet that story out so you can read it for yourself. It is really, really interesting work there. Again, that's from Steve Daniels, senior reporter at Crain's Chicago Business. And I also tweet out that earlier story from Natalie Kitroff that we talked to about pregnancy discrimination in the workplace. Right now, we're going to take a little break, get you to news, all that good stuff back in just a bit here on 720 WGN.